Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 338. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a great guest tonight, but first, let's bring in my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going. I'm just ready for some Arizona Fall League rosters. The Dominican Winter League draft is happening as we are recording, so that's been interesting to follow and look at the results. And now I just want to know who's going to play in Arizona and who we're going to see. But counting down the days now at this point, as the minor league season is wrapping up, ready to get back to the ballpark already. I was just there 3 days ago. So it's going to be a good one for sure. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this episode. Good guest and good topic.
Yeah, I was just there an hour ago watching some Jonah Tong. It's got this last week of the regular season in AA. Binghamton's in town. Got Jonah Tong tonight. He was interesting in several different ways. And then I think David Sandlin, we go for his last start of the season on, I believe it's Friday. Got to double check and confirm that. But yeah, season's basically done or about to be done. It's kind of weird. It feels like it was just starting. We're just going to first game of the year back in April. And yeah, now we're in mid-September and got another month and a half until Arizona. It's going to be a lot of fun. But as I mentioned, we do have a guest with us tonight. He is a Dynasty content writer for Pitcherless and Fantrax now as well. Our good buddy, @M_Ski_SKI22 on Twitter, Martin Sokolsky joins us. Martin, how you doing?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on again. Also looking forward to getting out to Arizona for the fall league. Give me Andrew Painter or give me death. I really want to see Painter out in Arizona, sure. Also looking forward to some live action. Jackson Jobe is in the area, so hopefully I get up to see him before the Tigers realize that they sent him to AAA.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I didn't get to see Job in AA, unfortunately. They never, when he was there, they never came anywhere near here. Sucks the schedule didn't work out. I was hoping to see him, and obviously we didn't see him last year in Arizona because he left before we were able to see him, before we got out there. So, you know, hopefully you get to see him. Obviously one of the best in the game. And we're going to talk some prospects today. We'll talk our top 10s. You know, we've had a lot of graduations recently. Cameron Arrow was the most recent one the other day. Holiday, what, week and a half, 2 weeks ago or whatever it was. Pretty different looking top 10 from what we had a few months ago. A lot of new names in the top 10, new number one. So I think it'd be fun to go over that. Some recent risers and followers in all of our rankings. And yeah, a lot of fun stuff here. Before we get into all of that though, usual housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter. Again, Martin is @M_SKI22. Chris is @RotoClegg. I'm @EricCross04. Show is @ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both Chris and I's personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for work from each of us. This is where all our dynasty and prospect rankings live. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout. Get you 10% off any premium package. Baseball, football, basketball, whatever you want. RotoBaller's got it over at rotoballer.com. All right, let's kick it off with our personal top 10s. Martin, as our guest of honor tonight, you want to start with your current top 10 prospect rankings?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel privileged to go first. I will say that I preemptively took Dylan Cruz off my list because I know he's going to graduate by the end of the year, but I will plug him in and let you know where I have him. For me, it's Walker Jenkins at one, Jason Dominguez at two, Roman Anthony at three, Kobe Mayo at four, Jackson Jobe at five, Samuel Bosayo at six, Travis Pizana at seven, Cole Emerson at eight, Max Clark at nine, and Sebastian Walcott at 10. And as I mentioned, Dylan Cruz, I did preemptively take him off, but I would have him slotted in at number eight overall. So,
awesome. Yeah, we probably still have another few big names off the list here before the end of it. So, yeah, it's going to next year. It's going to be definitely a different looking list. Chris, what's your current top 10?
Got a Jason Dominguez checking in at one, Roman Anthony at two, Kobe Mayo at three, Walker Jenkins four, and Samuel Bosayo at five. And then Dylan Cruz, six, Emmanuel Rodriguez, seven, Travis Pizana at eight, Noah Schultz at nine, and Andrew Painter at number 10. And I never go this high on pitchers, but a war of attrition here of who's left. And,
I know. Yeah,
going with some pitchers.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like I had a couple guys in my top 10 that I knew I'd get some questions about when I tweeted it out the other day, and I was like, I added them, like, these two get aided by the fact that this is not quite as strong of a top 10 as it was a few months ago. Somebody's got to get up in there. Usually I'm trying to fit like 15 guys in my top 10. From this time, it was like, I only really want to put like seven of these guys in the top 10. So it's definitely a different feeling. But for me, I got Jenkins one, Jason Dominguez two, Roman Anthony three, Kobe Mayo four, Dylan Cruz five, Emmanuel Rodriguez six, Sammy Bosayo seven. I still have Troy Condon eight. He's moved on a few spots, but I still have him in my top 10 for now. Travis Pizana nine, and Christian Campbell in the 10 spot there. So a lot of fun names. A lot of some of these younger names are starting to trickle in there. Like Martin, you got the last three there, Emerson, Clark, and Walcott are already cracking your top 10. Walcott's really turned it on lately, so is Clark. Emerson's had a pretty solid season as well. Now, so let's go over to Walcott here, probably the trendiest guy out of that three. What have you seen from Walcott over the last few months that has you really intrigued and putting him in your top 10 now?
So obviously, for me, he's got some of the best raw tools in the top 10 of all the players in the top 10. He's got the power, the speed, the athleticism. He's still got the body that can still grow a little bit, which I'm encouraged by. Obviously, there's some concerns with strikeout rate, especially with climbing north of 30%, but the things he's doing at high A and now in double A are pretty ridiculous considering that he's 18 years old. I just feel like he's got a really high ceiling and possibly the most upside of any of the players in this top 10.
So. Yeah, he definitely does. This is, if he starts tapping into that power more consistently, he's got really exciting power speed blends. Yeah, definitely there with you. One of the more exciting young prospects in the minors now and already climbing the ladder, getting a little taste of double A here with the high A season ending, so I definitely like to see him get that little test here, even if it's just for a short period of time. Chris, a question about the strikeout right here with Kobe Mayo. That's I've seen a lot of people questioning when I said I still had him top five. There were some people that are like, hey, why do you still have Mayo top five? He's gonna struggle with the K rate. First taste of the majors hasn't looked good, even obviously very small sample size. Are you concerned with some of the swing and miss in Mayo's game? Because obviously the upside could be one of those tier one third basemen getting up there Austin Riley levels, but there has been some, you know, swing and miss issues here and there. Are you concerned about that long term?
Not really. He's shown enough over long enough stretches where I'm not that worried. In the pro sample, like, it is what it is. If you want to ding a player for 37 plate appearances, that's on you. Like, it's not something that I'm gonna choose to do. But Mayo's made enough contact all year. It's at least like an average contact profile. And that's really all you need when you have that kind of power. Yeah. Austin Riley, we saw evolve and grow into more contact, but it's been fine. 73% overall, you know, near 83% in zone. And when you have a 14% barrel rate, like, who cares? When you hit the ball as hard as he does, I'm not going to get concerned about some late season struggles. It is a long year. It's, if you want to talk about like the more recent struggles, I think he's been fine. Actually, his contact rates have gone up, which is weird to say. If you look since like, you go back to post All-Star break and it's like 86% in zone. So, yeah, I look at Mayo and yeah, he had a rough pro sample, but that creates a good buying opportunity. When you, and most players come up and struggle initially in the majors, it's rare we see someone come up and hit the ground running right away. So all that to say, I'm not concerned in the slightest about Coby Mayo, and I think that it's created a really good buying opportunity on him.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think there's maybe a little prospect fatigue with Mayo at this point. And I think with a couple of Baltimore guys, but yeah, I think everyone's moved on to Bisaya, the next fun one. Obviously, he deserves it. He's one of the best prospects in the game, and all three of us have him top 10 right now. He's definitely a deserving player to have a lot of buzz. But I think people are starting to not forget Mayo, but he's lost a little bit of that shine a little bit. And that's why, yeah, I definitely agree that he's good buy low right now, and I'm still as in on him as I was. I still have him fourth. I don't have him second or third anymore because I moved a couple guys ahead of him, like Anthony and Walker Jenkins. But yeah, still potential top 30 or so fantasy player if everything clicks with him, with some of the best raw power in all of baseball. So yeah, definitely exciting there. Now, Chris, you were the only one of us, obviously me and Martin, have Walker Jenkins at number one. You had him at number four. Jenkins, I think, is a really fun one, obviously. And if he can stay healthy and the power continues to develop, I think he's going to be an absolute monster. Obviously, he's a good athlete, very advanced at the plate, more walks than strikeouts so far, and it's not even really close on that regard. Is the recent, and this question for either of you, actually, Martin, I'll start with you, because you had him number one along with me. This is a concern I have about, he's already had some issues, the hip issue and whatnot. And then the Twins, some of their other top guys have had some injury issues. Obviously, Buxton, Royce Lewis, Brooks Lee a little bit. Does that give you any pause, that combination of Twins track record and already the issues that Jenkins has had?
I don't think so. We can't blame Walker Jenkins for Byron Buxton's inability to stay healthy or Royce Lewis's inability to stay healthy. It's not his fault. He's still 19 years old. Even with the injuries, he's still performing at a pretty impressive rate considering. And ultimately, with you talked about how you and I are the only ones that have him at number one, I really could have interchange any of my top three as the number one overall prospect. With all the graduations, there's really no clear-cut guy, in my opinion. And so to answer your question, no, I don't have any concerns about the early injury bug that's getting Jenkins. I think he's going to be fine. Again, one of those things that we don't talk about is the body type for him. He's got that similar build to guys like a Luis Robert and things like that. Down the road, it could be a problem. These guys add this bulk and they get almost too big. Hopefully Jenkins doesn't end up that way. Initially, I don't have any concerns.
Chris, how about you? Any concerns there?
I don't think so. He looks to me like he has the frame where it's like, it's not as worrisome. He's pretty filled out already.
I saw him
a couple of months ago. He's thick, very thick lower half, and is strong. Obviously, like there's issue. You can come up with issues at like all body types, but Jenkins is impressive. The hit tool is very good. One of the better hit tools in the minors. He's got underrated speed. He may tick off, like it may tick down with time, just given the body and that he may not be able to sustain it. But right now, he's a plus runner, which is crazy to say. Hasn't necessarily translated with stolen bases. He had 12 this year, just 4 in single A and 8 in high A. I don't know. I look at this profile. The biggest question to me is, does he tap into more power? Certainly in there. It's got to be in there given the kind of frame that he has. But can he pull the ball enough and get in the air enough to really make it work? If he does, then I think that there could be 25, 15 potential here. And you look at the numbers, and he's been more than fine contact-wise. I mentioned he's going to not chase. He's going to get on base at a high clip. But then the EVs have been a little underwhelming. He's run a ninth percentile of around 102 all year. That's held into high A. And that's fine. Like, for his age, it's above average. MLB average is about 103.5. He's not barreling the ball up very often when he did hit it hard. I had some good looks at him, though. He definitely barreled the ball up when I saw him when I was in Florida in July. But I think that it certainly is. Could be a number one profile pretty easily. I'm just not there yet because Jason's done it in the majors. He's looked like a superstar. Anthony has got to the power already. He's still got speed. Mayo and him are probably interchangeable. But at the end of the day, like, I've got it tiered out with Jason and Anthony in tier one, and then tier two is the rest of the top 10.
Yeah, they've definitely gotten a bigger second tier. For me, the top three for me in the first tier with Jenkins, Dominguez, and Anthony, and slight drop down LeMayo, Cruz, Rodriguez, Basayo, etc. But yeah, definitely a bigger tier two. I could even, if I really wanted to, I could stretch that tier two into the early teens, I think. It's definitely a lot of guys, some fun guys like DeVries, Lawler, I think still a top 10 talent, but obviously plenty of injury question marks there. Max Clark is getting close. I've walked up pretty close to, and Martin has them at 10. You guys like Matt Shaw. So there's a lot of the guys that are definitely in that discussion. Colt Emerson, so I'm sure some. Martin has them 10. I know a lot of others do as well. Bryce Eldridge is flying up there. So it's getting pretty crowded there. Maybe we don't have that super duper elite guy right now. Like when we had all those names earlier in the year, all the Jays with Langford and then Jackson Holiday, Jackson Chourio, et cetera, Junior Caminero. But it's still a pretty good top 10. It's not, again, not that super elite guy. The one from mine I wanted to point out, Christian Campbell, obviously one of the, maybe the biggest rise among prospects this year. Coming into the year, when what he was allotted for when he was drafted, he was hit, good hit tool, good approach, and the speed and like the power was the question mark. But as Chris and I mentioned on previous episodes here, that power is ticked up. And right now, in AAA so far, I think he's been there for about 30-something games or so. He's got a hard hit rate. I think it's right around 45% last time I checked. Contact rate still over 80% in AAA. So the fact that he's had that power tick up to the point where he could probably think he could be a good 20-plus homer bat at Fenway Park with good speed, with still has the contact and the approach, like nothing else has dropped off, and proximity now with him in AAA. Obviously, he got hurt earlier today. Hopefully, that's not something that's too major long-term, though it is the end of the season. But the fact that he has all the tools are coming together and with that proximity, and he's done a lot of things that nobody else has done this year. I tweeted out that he's the first prospect to have at least 30 home runs, to be 30 doubles, 20 home runs, 20 steals, and a 320 average in a season since Cole Calhoun. Who would have thought it would have been Cole Calhoun back in, I want to say it was 2011. Kyle Tucker just missed by a couple doubles back in 2015 or whatever that was. But yeah, so I at this point, I'm like, you know what? Given that we have a drop off in talents and a wide open back end of the top 10, I figured why not put Christian Campbell in there? And if you get that from second base, that's going to be a pretty fun profile. So I wanted to ask both of you, where do you guys have Christian Campbell in your current rankings? Martin, I'll start with you.
So for me, I've got Campbell at 25. I'm not as aggressive with Campbell as I probably should be. I keep waiting for him to fall off, and it just hasn't happened yet. And I'm not sure if it's going to happen. It just seems like there's a little volatility in the swing. We talking before this about how aggressive he is with the swing. So for me, I'm just waiting for him to fall off. But for now, I'm good with where I've got him at 25, but I definitely see him rising even further.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I think there's a pretty wide range. I don't think anyone's out there that's low on him necessarily. Some people have him at 25, 30 range or something like that. And I have him 10. I thought that was being a bit aggressive. Totally understand that. And I saw that another buddy of ours, another big-time ranker, Michael Halpern, put on number one. It's definitely a pretty wide range of rankings right now on Christian Campbell. Chris, where do you fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, I've got him right at 25 as well. Yeah, you could go all over the board with him. I think that given the sustainability of what he's done all year, given the improvement in contact rate all year, he got back to who he was. And this is a profile that has always been a contact first throughout his career. Added a lot of bat speed and power this offseason, and is able to blend the two this throughout the year, especially as he bumped to double A. Campbell's a good athlete. He's about as good of a locker room presence as you'll find. Good kid, good hard worker. I'll bet on him succeeding. And some people have said 25 is too low, but like your top 25 prospect in baseball, I'd say that's pretty good. So
yeah,
not quite as high, but to say you're one of the best 25 and of every minor leaguer out there, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I gotta give you props. I did on Twitter the other day, but Chris called this. Maybe not. Maybe you didn't call it this. You thought it'd be like this.
No, but I didn't expect this.
You said that Anthony was your guy the previous year, and you're my guy this year in that Sox system to make that jump. It was Campbell, and you were absolutely right. You tweeted that out like April 10th or whatever it was, right at the beginning of the season. Props to you on that one. And yeah, it's really fun just to think about what next year could be with that middle infield and see what the Red Sox do, but I hope they hold on the Campbell. That's why I just want to see him play second base, and whether it's Meyer at short or Story, it's be pretty fun middle of the infield after this year where we dealt with a hodgepodge in the middle infield with even Connor Wong playing second base and who is the other catcher? Mickey Gasper playing second base both in the same week. Two catchers playing second base in the same week. That's how the middle infield for Boston went this year. So a lot more fun next year, at least I hope. All right.
Just curious, Chris, real quick. What's that? Chris, where did you have Campbell preseason? Just out of curiosity. Do you remember? I know I didn't have him. He wasn't on my radar. I'm going to be completely honest.
No, I mean, he was only on – okay, so I saw him last fall. I guess he came up to Greenville in the end of August last year after they drafted him. And so I was – a little bit aware of him. He was there for 3 weeks probably, but he was the only college hitter in the 2023 draft with a 90 mile an hour average EV and a 90% contact rate to hit those thresholds. So that was obviously something that kind of stood out. And then when I was in Fort Myers in March, there were some guys in the Red Sox org that were like, Campbell's made some swing changes. He's going to break out. And so I already had that edge, like just knowing and hearing that. And then the first game of the year at home, he hits one 113 off the bat, 450, like over the batter's eye in center field. That's 420 feet in Greenville. So it was just like at the right place at the right time kind of thing. I had Campbell in, I don't know why, I see my May. Where's my April rankings? In May, it was 242, the beginning of May. Where can I go back? It was probably like 300-ish preseason, but I will tell you right now. Yeah, it was like 321. So just having some insider info that I was able to get helped out there.
Yeah, that definitely worked out pretty well. And I was looking at my rankings of him. He got into my rankings at 362. And then every month it was like basically cut in half. He went from 362 in my May rankings to 185 in June, to 86 in July, to 31 in August, and then now down to my top 10. It's just huge rise for Campbell. Been really fun to watch for sure. All right, let's move over to our risers and fallers here. We're each going to give two names, so two risers and two fallers each. And I'll give you, a little bit of explanation as to why they're rising or falling in our rankings and probably some free-flowing discussion within the players here. I'll start with our risers here. Martin's first riser is one of the better bats from the 2024 draft class.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with what I've seen from Cam Smith so far. 14th overall pick in the draft for the Cubs. Really solid body. Really made some big improvements at Florida State in the sophomore season as a draft eligible. Cut the strikeout rate down, started chasing less, contact rate went up, tapped into the power. The Cubs have been aggressive with him. He's already been promoted to AA. It's a small sample, but 323, 415, 646 slash, 21% strikeout rate, 15% walk rate, 7 home runs already. I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Cam Smith, and I really feel like he's a top 10 FIPD pick, and you could justify him maybe as a top 5 even, the way that Jock has struggled initially. And I don't know, I'm just really liking what I'm seeing out of Cam Smith.
Yeah, and he had was a 6 or 7 game like homer streak. He was really hot. Then he struggled a little bit once he got the bump, but settled in nicely in high A and up to double A as well. And yeah, he's really showing a good approach, showing that power, that power uptick that he saw the last year at Florida State. That's still there right now, so that's nice to see. Yeah, definitely a really fun bat there. And yeah, I can see him getting topped. I wonder where he'll wind up in. He did like an ADP for FYPD, probably around 10, maybe 11, 12. I think he's definitely really good selection in that range. Chris, who is your first riser?
So I am taking Michael Arroyo, who has been an incredible breakout this year. It's a really fun story of him really taking some steps forward in a lot of ways. It's a smaller second baseman, but the tools are there. He's a really stout player. And I know, like, you can say that, yeah, Everett's a really hitter-friendly place to hit. I get that. His EVs are comparable with Lazaro Montes, who everyone loves. Gets the ball quite hard. It's a 9th percentile already around MLB average at you know, 19 years old, and he's turned into home run power. He's got 23 home runs this year. He's fast enough to steal some bags. You know, I think that the worst indicator of speed is minor league stolen bases, but Arroyo does have some speed here. It's a plus to maybe 55 runner, and it translates. Like, he steals efficiently, and he gets on base at a high clip, very low chase rate, good contact rates, just a really well-rounded profile. I'm not sure Arroyo ever ascends to being like a top prospect by any means, but right now he's in my top 50. I think he's still got some room to grow a little bit, and I'm pretty excited to see where this goes. It'll be a good test for him, most likely in Double-A next year. Their affiliate in Double-A Arkansas is a terrible place to hit, as we are seeing with some Harry Ford struggles right now, who has got massive home road splits. But I think the tools with Arroyo are definitely there, and he's made major strides this year. So I'm looking at Arroyo as definitely looking like an everyday second baseman at this point, with a really good bat and be very viable for fantasy purposes. So he's one that's moved up a lot for me throughout this year.
Yeah, and it's not like there's a lot of guys in his way at the major league level. Obviously, Seattle's kind of struggled to put together a decent lineup around Julio, who obviously has had his struggles this year too. And yeah, I have a Arroyo top 50 as well, and I think he's one of the top 50 caliber prospects that just doesn't get talked about nearly enough. Again, there's no wow tool, but it's pretty solid across the board, and especially at second base, that could be a pretty fun profile. My first riser here, Dalton Rushing. I've always liked Rushing, but I probably was a little lower in rankings because I don't rank catchers as high as most people do, for fantasy purposes at least. But now that he's looking, I'm not saying the door on catcher is closed, but now that he's really kind of transitioned to the outfield, obviously they get Will Smith there. I like Rushing a lot more now that even more, if he can keep that eligibility somehow, but play most of his games outside of catcher, that would be phenomenal, but we shall see how that works out. Transition has been pretty seamless. He struggled the last like week or so, but overall this year he's doing similar things to what he's done the last few years. Obviously, he had the pretty big breakout his final year at Louisville, 310, 470, 686, 23 home runs. His first year in the minor leagues, you know, that's when he really got a lot of prospect helium, when he hit 404 in 30 games. Last year, average did dip, but still had a 404 OVP, 15 home runs, 89 games. This year, 22 and 105 with a 271, 386, 503 slash line. I think this guy's going to be an absolute OBP monster. He's shown that OBP over 400 in college, OBP over 400 so far in the minor leagues. In how many? 224 games in the minor leagues. He has a 412 OBP, so that's not a small sample size by any means. It's above average or plus power there. Look at some of his metrics here just in AAA recently. He's got a EV a little over 90 miles an hour, hard hit rate 41%, barrel rate 9%, and those have dipped over the last week or so. They were higher a week and a half ago, and decent contact skills as well. He's got a contact rate right around 76.5% right now. I think he's going to be like a 260 caliber hitter. Again, super high elite OBP, and if he's getting full season worth of plate appearances, this could be a 30-homer bat as well. Definitely. I was too low on him, and now that he's moved out from behind the plate, made that transition to corner outfield, I've bumped him way up, and I think he's a no-doubt top 50 fantasy prospect. I have him in the 30s right now, and you can make a case for him maybe even in the top 20 in an OBP format. So I definitely love Rushing at this point. I was too low on him, and now I've corrected that and moved him behind the plate. I think this would be good for his fantasy value, even if he does lose that catcher tag. All right, second riser here. Let's just keep it right with the Dodgers and with Martin's second one.
Yeah, one more thing on Rushing, too, before we get off topic, is a lot of people dig him for his performance last season, but a lot of people don't realize that he was dealing with concussion issues at one point during the season. And, I mean, we've seen what concussions can do to guys in various sports, so something to keep in mind when you look at his performance from last year. My next riser is Emil Morales, big kid. 17 years old, out of the Dominican, just won the Dominican Summer League MVP award. Actually, correction, he's Spanish-born, but trained in the Dominican. My apologies. Signed with the Dodgers back in January in the international signing period. Really big standout in the DSL this summer. 342, 478, 691 slash, 14 homers, 11 doubles, 12 steals. I don't think speed's going to be part of his profile moving forward, but I definitely like the power. And for a 17-year-old kid, he really made a big impact this summer in the summer league. We consider guys like Jesus Mare, Eduardo Beltre, who we'll talk about later, Paulino Santana, for him to be the MVP of that group. Pretty impressive performance from him this summer. So,
what do you know? Another fun Dodgers prospect. They just grow them on trees. I swear. They just have some secret laboratory somewhere. Every year, it's like, oh, previous year's batch, they're now top prospects or graduated. Oh, but they got a few more coming up. It's almost like Seattle, Padres too. Not so much recently, but Seattle seems to be another team that always has those big risers. And yeah, Emil Morales has been really fun to follow this year for sure. See if he can keep that up next year. At that point, if he continues this next year, he'll be top 10, top 20 prospect by midseason or so. All right, Chris, who is your second riser? Maybe a former Dodger.
I'm going with Dairon Lorenzo, who is a former Dodger and will be participating in the Arizona Fall League. He was obviously traded from the Dodgers to the Tigers in the Jack Flaherty deal. I've always liked Lorenzo. He had some struggles early in the year, and he's just kicked it into another gear since the trade. We obviously knew the power was there. Last year, he had 24 home runs and 418 plate appearances with single-A Rancho Cucamonga, and the power of the EVs were just really solid for the age. Lorenzo is just turned 21, so he's still younger. And high A, obviously, you want to see him progress as he moves up. So, you know, we'd love to see him get that bump to double-A start next year and hopefully, you know, take off. But you look at the underlying power, it's ridiculous pop. The ninth percentile of 108 miles an hour is elite. It's about as elite as they come. The contact rates have gotten better. He doesn't chase much at all. When he's making contact, he's doing some serious damage. So there are contact issues, and that's a question. But you look and strikeout rate pre-trade, 26%. Since the trade, there's a smaller sample, 115 plate appearances. That's down to 17.4%. He almost walks too much. I look at this profile, I'm like, dude, please swing the bat a little bit more because I don't want to see a player walk 20-plus percent of the time. That does nothing for fantasy purposes, and it almost is a ding in a sense. I'd love to see Lorenzo be a little bit more aggressive and be willing to put the bat on the ball more often than not, especially when, you know, it's a borderline pitch. Don't be afraid to jump on that. Yeah, since the trade, the contact rates have improved. The swing rate's down. No shock given the walk rate, but you know, it's around a 73% contact rate since the trade, which is around a little bit better than average. And obviously, the results have been there. So 315, 470, 562 slash. I think Lorenzo is probably going to light up the AFL. He's going to become the AFL darling that everybody loves because he's got big pop. He's going to put up some majestic home runs. And his stock's probably going to soar. So if you can still make ads and he's available, probably would add him now because AFL pitching is normally not good. He's going to feast there. Ball will fly. And I just think his stock will be the one that goes up a good bit.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I've always been very intrigued by Lorenzo. And yeah, definitely encouraged to see him turn the season around over the last couple of months. I'm gonna go to the Rockies here for my second riser and go Cole Kerrig, who I think is pretty underrated right now. In a similar sense to like Michael Arroyo, that with the bat at least, he doesn't have anything with the bat that really stands out. But what he has going for him, Kerrig's a plus defender, phenomenal athlete, you know, and really runs wild on the bases. You know, he has 53 steals this year. And yeah, I think he could be a 30 plus steal guy long term. Again, he's a phenomenal athlete, 6'2, 200. And I think he might even be a little bit taller than that now, but phenomenal athlete for his size, moves really well out there, and is a great glove as well. So that'll help like, in the Pete Crow Armstrong way, even if he's struggling, to help keep him in the lineup because he adds that value out there in the outfield. And he's played other positions in the past, including a little catcher, doesn't play there anymore, but. Now, most of his time this year has been in center field, but played a little shortstop as well. He's got 17 games at short, 94 in center, so up the middle defense. Love that. And I think the bat, while it's not a loud bat, he's made strides with the bat. The approach is solid. K rate's under 20%. Walk rate's a little under 10%. And he just picks up a lot of extra base hits. And yeah, he's never going to be a guy that's, I don't think he's even going to be a 50 grade game power guy. But if he, you know, I think he can get the fringe average. You've seen it tick up a little bit this year. And obviously, Coors Field will definitely give him a little bit of a boost. So if he can be like a 15 plus homer guy, 30 plus steals, solid average and OBP as well, I think he's going to be a pretty fun and pretty valuable fantasy asset. That's again with Michael Arroyo just not getting talked about or ranked highly enough, I think. So I have Kerrig right around where I have Arroyo, right in that 40 to 50 range. And I think you could see him maybe later, you know, next year come up, probably start the year in double A. He was at high A this year. So maybe later 2025 debut, but definitely by 2026, you'll see him up in that outfield for Colorado. All right, let's move over to our fallers now. Who is your first faller, Martin?
So my first guy is Dylan Beavers. I think my problem with Beavers was that I fell in love more with Oregon and the developmental tools than I did the player. He's going to profile better in OBP formats because of the walk rate, but I'm a little concerned. I got some live looks at Beavers earlier this year. I don't like the hit tool. I'm not confident in the hit tool. I'm also not confident in his defensive abilities. He did not play a solid left field when I was there. The arm is really good, but the rest of it just did not look the part. His slash this year is 239, 344, 413. He does have 15 homers and 30 steals. He does run well, but he's not going to steal 30 bases in the big leagues for sure. But when there was a comp before, naturally, between him and Colton Cowser being in the same org. But for me, I think Cowser just had a better hit tool and is a far superior defender for me. And even though I've had Beavers as high as 34, I've got him down at 75 right now, and I'm considering moving him lower. I'm just, I don't know if it's fatigue or if I'm just out on him, but I'm just not in love with him like I was when he first came up. So,
yeah, and he's one where it's like, where does he fit into their long-term picture? And he's buried in the depth chart too, so you know, factor that in too. But yeah, he's definitely, you know, taking a step back this year. Yeah, fun player, but you know, definitely some flaws in that hit tool. Chris, who is your first faller?
All right, so I'm going with Cole Young, who taking some hits for dropping. I was pretty high on Cole Young pretty early in the year. He had shown some power growth. There was some EVs where I'm like, okay, like maybe there is more power here. I've actually dug in a lot with the questions. I've dug in even more to the video, and I looked back, and early in the season, he was very loose in the box. There was some aggression in the swing. The bat speed was definitely there. And at least the last month or so, of I was looking game by game, like what changed? He's more closed in his stance. He's very tight in the box. Doesn't seem free at all, and the bat speed's just gone. It's weird to look at. And again, like you look and Cole Young is playing in one of the harder places to hit. Like Arkansas is a harder place to hit, even though it's considered Texas League. Like that ballpark is not one that's very hitter friendly at all. And looking at the splits, it's interesting because he's actually been better at home versus on the road, which is Harry Ford's a massive gap. So you can't just sit here and blame the home ballpark on, you know, Young struggles. It's just right now, it's a lack of power. The power's been, I won't say it's zapped, it's just not developed. And I'm wondering if one of those loud EVs early in the year was just kind of an outlier. And if that's the case, then who is Cole Young? He's a high contact hitter with, you know, you hope he gets to 40 grade power. He's not a speedy guy by any means. I know he's stolen 23 bases this year. Again, stolen bases are a terrible indicator of speed and future success. His clock times are below average, maybe average at best. I've clocked several of his home to first sprints, and you know, I got 4.25 to 4.3 out of the left side. That's not that good. And so I don't know. I still think there's some development to be had here. He's 21. He's a young 21 in double A. So obviously you got to give him some credit there. He does have a frame where it does look like there is room to maybe add a few pounds of weight. But again, how does that hurt the athlete here? And I think that's kind of a question. The progression is not gone how I hoped that it would. And considering that he's not really added any power from like an exit velocity standpoint, and he's added, he did add weight this offseason. He's added weight throughout the year. I don't know. I'm still finding myself a little bit questioning. I was pretty high on Young, as I mentioned. I dropped him to like the back end of the top 100 for fantasy purposes, have him around like 90. Certainly, he's going to play better in an OBP context, in a point league context. He's an elite contact profile. I just hope we see some power development, and I'm just not sure that he's more than a 10 home run bat at this point.
Yeah, and adding to the stolen base thing, he's also been caught a good amount of times as well. Like, his success rate isn't overly high. He's been caught 10 times this year in 33 attempts, and 10 times last year in 32 attempts. So, yeah, he's one where it's like another one that I'm not comparing these two, but another one with the power thing with James Triantos, where I just have questions about power. And these guys, like, can they, are they more than 10 homer guys? And that's why I've kept them, you know, a bit lower in my rankings. But Cole Young is actually one I was considered putting on here as well. And I just realized while you were talking, Chris, that if I had given mine after Martin's with Dylan Beavers, I could have had maybe the best segue in the history of this podcast, going from Dylan Beavers to my guy who went to high school in Beaverton, Oregon, and that's Noble Meyer, who this one pains me because I've been a big Noble Meyer guy. And I think we both really have, Chris, on this podcast. We've both spoken highly of him, and the stuff is really good. There's no doubting that he could be one of the best pitching prospects in the game, and a guy that I thought could even be maybe the number one prospect. I think I said last offseason, I thought there was a chance that he could be the number one pitching prospect by the end of 2024, and that obviously has not happened. And for one major reason, the control, strike throwing, is just not there. And he thought maybe he could take a step forward this year. Nope, that has not happened. It's even probably I say taking a step back as the season's gone on here. In 74 innings, he's got 55 walks. It's just every game. It's 4 innings, 3 walks, 5 innings, 4 walks, or something like that. Yeah, it's just not getting better. I think the walk has actually ticked up as the season progresses. I hate to say it, but he's still early. I'm not saying I'm going to be out on him or making a huge drop down my rankings, though he has dropped. He's not top 100 for me anymore. But this is a similar path to another guy who went to the same exact high school, Mick Abel. It's really, you start like looking at these two side by side. It's, and you know, different arsenals. It's not like direct comp that way, but you look at their very similar builds, 6'5" on the slider side. Both of them, they both have really good stuff. I've seen Mick Abel live 3-4 times, something like that. I forget at this point. I haven't seen Noble Meyer live yet, but both really good stuff, but just have been extremely limited by their lack of command and inability to throw strikes consistently. So I hope Meyer doesn't continue down that road. Mick Abel has, the point where Megan Mick Abel is, I think, around 400 in my rankings at this point. The stuff is still really fun with Noble Meyer, and I hope Miami can turn him around. He's only 19. He'll be 20 in January. Still very young, but hopefully we can see him turn this around and make some positive strides there, because yeah, he's been an unfortunate follower for me here over the last few months. All right, we got 3 more players to get to here, 3 more fallers, and Martin's going with another pitching prospect in the National League East, going to the Atlanta Braves for this one.
Yeah, speaking of guys who are struggling with consistency throwing strikes, I've got A.J. Smith-Shawver as one of my fallers. Smith-Shawver was really good last year, 2.76 ERA across 3 levels, made it to the majors, but that's where the home run issue started to take notice, and now it's carried over to this year as well. He's given up 16 home runs in 75 innings this year compared to 4 last year in the minors. He allowed 7 in that short 25-inning span in the majors in 2023. Mechanically, he just seems off. His breaking pitches aren't there. And when they are there, they're over the middle of the plate and they're just getting hammered. He really doesn't have anything to lean on for an out pitch. His changeup has gotten better from what I've seen this year, but his inconsistent command and the home run issues are really giving me some pause for concern. And he's really dropped down the org depth chart for me. I've got him as their SP5 in their org behind Waldrop, Caminiti, Murphy, J.R. Ritchie. And so I think the Braves really thought they were going to be able to lean on Smith-Shawver with the uncertainty about Chris Sale entering the season and Ronaldo Lopez as well. And it's a good thing both of those guys pretty much panned out, because Smith-Shawver just hasn't had it.
Yeah, it's been a really rough year. Obviously, last year he had that big rise and made his debut And this year, yeah, been a bit rougher for AJ Spishaver. Chris, before you get into your second guy, just being the Atlanta Brave fan that you are, what are your thoughts on Spishaver at this point?
Yeah, it's been a weird year, to say the least. He came in to the season, spring training, and the stuff was actually better than ever. And that's the weird thing. The velo was up pretty substantially. And it was like, I wonder if he's really struggled to harness this. And the odd thing is, like, the walk rate's been really high, but his strike rates have been good. So that's the bizarre thing to me. It seems to me there's maybe some waste pitches, and he's getting a little deeper in accounts than he should be. But he's still in strikes at actually above average clip, that's gotten to a plus clip later in the year. But the walk rates really haven't changed at all. So that's why I really struggled. And he is allowing a lot of barrels. I think, honestly, I would say the Braves rushed him last year. I think that probably messed with him a little bit. I still firmly believe in this stuff. And I think that he has the capability of being still a really good arm. You look, and the fastball, I think, has been solid this year, set 95. It's touched 99. It's got good whiff rate, good IVB on it from the release height that he throws it from. It's got good horizontal. The changeup looks pretty solid as well. It's got a 44% whiff rate on it. Good characteristics. Slider has a 36% whiff rate. And the curve is getting hit a little bit. That's been the interesting one where he hasn't missed as many bats. Location issue there. Also think that he probably needs to tweak the usage a little bit. It's pretty heavy four seam this year. And I think that, he's leaned on that. He always has, but it may hurt him a bit at times. His release point actually is pretty noticeably different from last year too. So it's something to dig in and see what's going on here. Because I'm looking at a 3-4 inch drop on release point on the fastball and change, which is pretty noticeable. Like, that's not nothing. And the horizontal release point is actually substantially different too. To me, like, maybe he's tinkering a little bit too much. Do I think he can still get back to being a relevant arm? Absolutely. He's still 21 years old. And I just wonder where he would be if the Braves hadn't called him up last year and rushed him. At the time when they called him up, he was 20, and he had all of, 7 innings above single A level when they called him up. So it's just absurd what they did. And I don't know. I just wonder if it messed with him a little bit. Something to dig into, because that release point is completely different this year. I think it's changed a lot, actually. And maybe he's struggling a little bit with command, just given the change in release spot. So I don't know. Something I'll dig into a little more video-wise and kind of see if I can identify, because that is interesting now that I'm looking at the data on it and seeing the pretty noticeable difference in vertical and horizontal release points.
Yeah, no, that's definitely interesting for sure. All right, who's your second faller?
It's got to be Tommy Troy, who I haven't been like super high on Tommy Troy. I just thought that he was a pretty solid player, not a flashy profile, but one that was well-rounded. We haven't seen that at all this year. Troy has really struggled. And if I remember right, he was sent down to the dev list, which that's obviously notable. He did spend some time at the complex, which, if I remember right, it was some injury, but also he was on the dev list for a little bit. 227, 319, 347 slash. Not great at all this year. And you look back, and Troy was very touted coming out of the draft, obviously. He went 12th overall. There was some pedigree with the name. He obviously was good enough to go that high in the draft, but the data was pretty strong, too, on Tommy Troy in college. And I look at it now and say, where did this go? It was a safe contact profile. Last year in college, it was 84% overall, 93% in zone contact, 21% chase rate. The EVs were pretty good. 106 90th with metal normally translates closer to 103 with wood, which would be around league average, major league average at that. And he topped out at 114. So there was certainly some things in the profile. I was like, all right, this guy can get to power. He's got speed. And he's got the hit tool. But yet we've seen really none of that this year. It's all kind of gone south. And I'm pretty worried about Tommy Troy at this point, just given the way the season's gone and how he's not progressed, I'll say. I was going to say progressed, but he hasn't progressed. and he's hitting the ball on the ground just entirely too much. So, yeah, I dropped Troy substantially, and I think that we need to see a lot from him, and I would need to see a lot more to get back in, honestly. So I'm pretty out here.
All right, my last follower, I'm going Colson Montgomery, who's had – had a pretty rough season. He's still getting some home runs here, and he's hit four over the last couple of weeks, so it's definitely helped a little bit. But overall, he's at 17 home runs in 118 games, but a 215, 328, 388 slash line. And this after having a 287, 456, 484 slash line last year with as many walks as strikeouts. He was almost overly passive last year. That walk rate last year was 19.2. You know, this year it's still good. He's at, you know, 11.7%, but the K rate, which was the same as the walk rate, 19.2%, has jumped up to 29.2%. So a 10% rise there. And just the metrics, they've been okay. It's pretty, probably as middle of the road as you can find for a set of metrics for a player here in AAA this year. Montgomery has been at about 73% contact rate, 86 mile an hour exit velocity, 36% hard hit rate, 8% barrel. Again, those aren't terrible, but they don't stand out. And this guy doesn't really have a lot of speed. He's not going to provide more than a handful of steals annually at best. And so you need the bat to be there for him to be an impact fantasy guy. It's almost like the Seager. Like, you need Seager doesn't run. You need Corey Seager to have an impact bat, and obviously he has. And I'm not saying Montgomery had that upside at all, but you need to make up for that lack of speed, and he has not done so. I think he could be an okay bat. I think he could 260 with 18 to 20 home runs or something like that, but I just don't see him standing out. He's pretty average with the bat right now. And I was hoping that back injury that he had last year, who knows if that is still affecting him. That's hard to say. I can't really speak to that. I'm speculating at this point, but he's not a top 100 guy for me anymore. I just haven't seen a lot from him, and he's been in one of the more hitter-friendly, you know, ballparks too. They're in Charlotte, so you figured maybe even better, you know, metrics, or excuse me, not metrics, better stats than he has. But no, it's been a pretty mediocre year for Montgomery. And he'll still get a shot, obviously, because, you know, he's one of their top prospects with the White Sox, and they don't really have anybody else in his way. So I'm sure this will give him a shot early next year to see what he can do. I still think he could be a decent hitter, but this doesn't really stand out to me, especially for fantasy purposes. But all right, that's going to wrap us up. Martin, you know, thanks a lot for joining us. This was a lot of fun. Always a pleasure talking with you. And any parting words here before we get out of here?
No, I just appreciate you guys having me on again. It's always nice to talk baseball with you, and looking forward to reconnecting out in Arizona and spending some time together watching some ball. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, we will see you about 6 weeks from now. So that'd be a lot of fun. And we will be back with all you listeners again in a few days. But until then, everyone take care.